Well, Steve McCabe, how are you?
Well, thank you, Jim. Yourself?
I'm very well. I don't know if Sam Johnson's with us in Christchurch yet, but he will be shortly. Sam and Steve on the panel after 4 o'clock. And if my computer would work properly, I could remind myself of all our topics that we'll be discussing. But it won't, so I'll just say good afternoon to you, Susan Baldacci.
Hello, Jim.
Hello.
You know, in Auckland, we like to talk about how outrageous real estate prices are. And I've got a story to start off with today that's going to make you feel so much better about if you're in the market to buy a house in Auckland. This is about a piece of property that's for sale in New York. And it's not a house. It's not a condo. It is a slab of basically concrete, a 12-foot by 23-foot slab of concrete. Yes, it is $1 million parking space.
No. Not $1 million.
$1 million.
Whereabouts in New York, Manhattan?
It's in Greenwich Village. So it's, you know, it's a very trendy, popular place. And it is it's attached to a new development of condominiums. So you buy the condominium, but if you want a parking place for in your condo, you got to buy that separately. And this one is $1 million.
But look, I've driven in Manhattan. And frankly, I will pay $1 million not to ever have to do that again. Why, if you've got that kind of money to spend on a parking space, pay for a helicopter to fly you to where your car's parked somewhere out on Long Island. That's crazy.
Yeah, it would pay for an awful lot of taxi trips, wouldn't it?
Also, it has been calculated. This works out to, if you've got a parking ticket every single day for 24 years, $115 parking ticket, because that's what they go for, apparently,
yeah,
take you 24 years to equal the cost of buying this.
Mind you can leave it to your grandchildren, can't you?
You can.
You can say this little slab of concrete is yours.
Yes, and just so you don't think, well, you know, it's a slab of concrete. It's just, you know, what would you do? This is a special space because it's the ceilings are tall enough that you can duplex the parking space and put in an elevator and double stack your cars.
You jest,
no,
don't you?
I
on
do
12
not
feet
jest.
By 23 feet.
It's a 15-foot ceiling, and one of the features, one of the reasons why it's going so much is that it can be duplexed. An elevator can be added so the owners can stack two cars in the space.
Right, this is Manhattan. In 6 months, this will be let out as a flat.
That's possibly true.
All right, so that's $1 million parking space.
Now, this was must have felt like you were in a parking space in Sao Paulo. They're enduring some of the worst traffic jams they've ever seen. And again, this is just to make you feel better about living in a city where perhaps you have to face traffic jams. This was a traffic jam that extended 250 kilometers. And that's because of a train strike in Sao Paulo. So 220 million commuters all had to get into their cars to get into the city. So this is the record-breaking. This beats the old record of 190 kilometer traffic jam before.
Yeah, where was that one?
Also in Sao Paulo.
It was also in Sao Paulo. So did tempers remain calm and the
guess
day
they
was
would.
Just greeted
no,
with
no,
equanimity?
No. They had angry drivers, you know, shaking fists at each other, protesters. They were tear gas involved, police coming in, complete chaos. But just to make the people in Brazil feel better, there was a traffic jam in China once. That was, you know,
one.
People were caught in 100 kilometers, but they were caught there for 9 days.
Yeah, that's the one. They lived in the traffic jam.
They lived in the traffic jam.
So this actually bodes really well for the Soccer World Cup, doesn't
it? Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Just pray that there's no strike during that time.
Exactly.
Now, that whole idea of being stuck in a traffic jam and all of that kind of stuff is the stuff that people write books about and do movies about, and now we're going to talk about movies. Sci-fi. Do you guys have a favorite sci-fi movie?
It's the one you're going to talk about.
Favorite book, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hitchhiker's
Worko Genius.
They made that into a movie. It wasn't a very good movie,
it was
it?
An awful film.
So the SFX magazine has done its poll of its readers and compiled a list of the top 10 sci-fi movies, best ones ever made. Number one, Jim?
Blade Runner.
Of course.
Yeah.
Jim's favorite.
Yeah, my favorite. It's just no argument, really.
It's really interesting. You know, it was released in 1982, and I think we all forget, because it has had such a huge cult following, that it was kind of a bomb in 1982.
It was a bomb. Nobody went to see it. But it is arguably the best movie that... Oh, I mean, you can argue about this. I'm not saying it's gospel. But the best movie that Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Daryl Hannah, and a couple of the others were ever in. I mean, they were all at the top of their game.
Well, definitely the best we've ever been together.
Yeah, well, that's true as well.
So yeah, Ridley Scott, it's fantastic. Well, so here's the top 10. Blade Runner, mm-hmm. Empire Strikes Back, Aliens, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, The Matrix, Serenity, another Alien movie, and Back to the Future, and The Dark Knight, number 10.
All right.
Interestingly, none of the new Star Wars films are in there.
None of the new ones, no. No.
They have the consolation of massive box office, though.
Yeah, well, you know, George Lucas obviously needs the money at this stage, doesn't he? You know, poor fella.
Right.
Maybe he needs it to buy his parking space in Manhattan.
$1 million.
Here's a story that sounds like a horrible. It could make a fantastic science fiction movie. Is the this rat plague that continues to plague a German town, but this happens to be the German town that is the scene of the famous Pied Piper legend. Hamelin, Germany.
And have they beat this up, or is this a genuine rat plague in Hamelin?
I just, you know, who knows? But I was thinking, boy, what a great idea for marketing. You've got, it's one of those double-edged swords. You've got some issues. You know, nobody talks about you anymore. You're famous for the legend of the Pied Piper in 2084, leading all the rats down to the river by playing a flute, and, you know, they all drown and so forth. You've got all sorts of things in the town dedicated to the rat. But what happens? The rats move in, and they're gnawing on cables and leading to problems with traffic lights and all sorts of things. So yeah, they're actually looking for the next Pied Piper or someone who can do something and control the rats in the city.
Are they attacking the chefs with the ladles and biting the babies in their cradles? They're not quite doing that yet.
They're not quite doing
that.
They
have chewed through the cables.
They've chewed through the cables at traffic lights.
They've updated the poem, obviously. Yeah. That's right. So Hamelin has a rat problem again, and they're looking for someone who can do something about it.
Someone who can do something about it. So
fantastic.
All volunteers apply to the Hamelin City Council.
Life as ever imitates art.
Yeah, yes. Now, if that story doesn't make you smile, this perhaps is a story that will. This is new research about smiling that's been done by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Now, it finds that most people actually smile not when they're happy, but when they're frustrated. Even if you sometimes don't know it, you don't realize that you're doing it. And they've also found in the study that computers can do a better job of telling when a smile is real, when it's a real smile, a genuine happy smile, or a smile born out of frustration.
Oh, really? There'll be an app for this soon, won't there?
There will be.
There'll be
an app on your. That's right. There'll be an app on your phone, and you just put it up to someone's smile.
To see if you're frustrated
if you're
really happy.
If you're happy to see me. So participants were asked to act out fake expressions of delight and frustrations and things like that. And then they were given tasks in front of a web camera that would truly cause them to be frustrated and truly make them happy. And then they showed these images to a computer, and the computer, with 90% accuracy, could detect which smile was frustration and which smile was a genuine happy smile.
Sam Johnson's got a lovely smile, and I notice he's just joined us now.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. Are you a bit shaken up from today?
Oh, I actually feel a bit nauseous, to be honest. It was quite a rock and a roll, and but, you know, still smiling. Good, always good to keep smiling, and it's sort of, you know, you do worry, but just what you're saying then, you know, what's the computer going to do next? What's it going to do in 10 years' time?
I know, it's because it's all so fast. For those of you who have just joined us and wonder what we're talking about, a decent 5.2 shake in Christchurch this afternoon, where, of course, Sam Johnson is joining us from. There are people who, you know, despite all the media training, never master the smile. Gordon Brown.
Yes.
Gordon Brown had this odd-looking smile.
Yeah, well, smiling's a human thing, really, so Gordon would struggle.
Everybody used to say that he had a phony-looking smile, you know, and bad timing with his smile. Wasn't quite sure when to smile and when not to smile.
That Herman Cain, you know, who was the Republican candidate, they used to parody his smile, didn't they?
Because it took 9 seconds to appear. He'd start small, and then it would just take him forever to get into the full-tooth grin, you know? So
to be fair, American politics is a very easy target here. I mean, you have novelty candidates every time round.
Well, if it's not something that, if it's not a smile, it's something else there.
You just bestow this on the world, don't you? It's your gift.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about skinny women.
This is an interesting story. Women over the years, this was a study, that, or not so much a study, but sort of a survey that was done in honor of the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. So they're looking at things from 60 years ago, comparing them to how things are today. They looked at women's waistlines, and women have apparently put on 6 inches on their waistlines in the past 60 years. This is just an average. And one of the researchers, one of the things they think is the reason for this is less housework. that, you know, house, you know, women in the 1950s would burn off around 1,000 calories per cleaning session compared with women today who don't do that. You know, the, you know, life's a little bit easier. I mean, these are women who often didn't have, you know, they didn't have washing machines. There was lots of reasons why they were doing a lot more work. They didn't sometimes have cars, so they would have to do the shopping and lug it back and all the rest of it.
Women's magazines, I remember this, used to advise women to drop a whole lot of drawing pins on the floor and then bend over and pick them up. And they said this would be very good for your figure. And I remember when Dan Buettner, you know, who does the Blue Zones books about where all the old people live to be very elderly on the planet, he said the best exercise you can get is that kind of regular domestic exercise.
Well, you know, vacuum cleaning, all that kind of stuff. That it does definitely take up, you know, gives you a bit of a workout.
So I've heard, yes.
So that's the hourglass figure, isn't it?
So the average middle-aged woman had a 28-inch waist in the 1950s. And today, the average measurement is 34 inches.
Now, these are real women, not like supermodel media type women, right? Well, they've gone the other way, right?
These are real women who have, yeah, that's right. These are real women who took part in this in the survey.
All right. Yeah. So that's where the hourglass. Sorry, Sam, you start talking and I interrupt you every time. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that's sort of solving our obesity problem. We just need to clean more and do the vacuuming every day instead of just once a month.
Well, Sam's right. We need to get rid of some of our newfangled household appliances, Susan, and go back to the way women used to do it.
Back the old good days, that's right. Well, you know, so many women are working, and it is so much harder sometimes to stay at home than it is to go to work because, you know, there's so much work that has to be done at the house.
Oh, look, tell me about it, Susan.
I know.
And the weekend's
looming. Just finding time in the day.
It is finding time in the day, and the weekend's already taken up Saturday morning with all that.
It's a tough life.
That's what children are for.
You've got it worked out, haven't you? Susan Baldacci, thank you. Have a lovely weekend. On the panel, Sam Johnson, Steve McCabe, coming up shortly.